Welcome everyone to the Dot Metaverse podcast. Please join us every week as we explore themes and ideas surrounding the metaverse today. Let's start with a few introductions before we dive in. My name is Caitlin Mueller, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I have 14 years of experience in the event and production industry, and I've been with TouchCast creating magic, as we like to say, as an event manager for just over a year now. I am thrilled to be in the company of TouchCast founder and CEO, Ido Siegel. But before we begin, let me tell you a little bit about why Ido is a good person to know in this new virtual landscape. Ido has 20 years of experience at the forefront of artificial intelligence and communications technologies. He leads the remarkable TouchCast team in the pursuit of future of communications. In this new era of remote work and enhanced productivity, TouchCast is really dedicated to supporting companies through their post-COVID transformation journey by helping run some of the world's top virtual events. Now, TouchCast is expanding our offerings, and we are launching the Enterprise Metaverse. In the TouchCast Metaverse, you can host virtual events, create mesmerizing retail experiences, conduct staff training, and make every meeting unforgettable. Welcome, Ido. So there's a lot of excitement around the metaverse and perhaps some confusion. How can you compare the metaverse to technological leaps that you've seen in the past? Can we get your perspective on the metaverse and what types of opportunities will be created here?
Sure. I think, yes, there's a tremendous amount of excitement around the topic. People are heralding it as the next stage of evolution of how we engage with technology, kind of comparing it to what happened with mobile phones as the last big jump we had. And before then, the internet, of course. And in that narrative, it's people are really, I think, eager to accept the idea that there is some new, fresh, exciting thing that will reinvent the world. But I think are really struggling to grapple with what that really is. And, you know, some really smart people have challenged the notion that this metaverse is something that's tangible versus a marketing initiative set by Meta, formerly named as Facebook. So I think it's a really important conversation to have for those that are really generally interested in what it is that it can do for their companies, their lives, et cetera. And my perspective on the metaverse is shaped by a journey that's been going on for some time. The first company I started when I dropped out of art school was a virtual reality company. And that was kind of in the early 90s. So it was quite a while ago. And needless to say, it was a bit too early. And much of what I've been involved with in the AI space and in the content space have always revolved around the insight of where we're headed. And really what metaverse means to me is an alternative space to the world in which we all navigate our lives. And that space is not simply a three-dimensional space, the metaphor that you might think of for a Ready Player One of virtual reality, but the space of all the ideas that flow in this as well. It's not simply a matter of the shape of things. It's also time and language and all these things that happen when humans interact with each other and solve amazing problems or create amazing things. That is all in this metaverse. When you put it into a digital fabric that benefits from the incredible technologies we now have access to, we can do incredible things to help us accelerate how we solve our hardest problems, how we collaborate better, how we learn, how we transact. It really presents an opportunity to bring a digital revolution accelerant to a world that is not been touched yet. And that is incredibly exciting, I think, for anyone that really starts seeing what's actually coming down the pike for us.
Yeah, this is really exciting and perhaps a bit overwhelming, trying to wrap our heads around this alternative space. Can you help us by explaining a bit more about the metaverse in relation to Web 2 versus Web 3, and then perhaps dig into TouchCast's role and other partners as we fully realize this digital revolution?
So I think the premise of the metaverse is a Web 3 construct and evolution from where we are today with Web 2 is the notion of decentralization. And in saying that, there is not one metaverse. Metaverse is like saying there's one website. So it's a new construct that allows the world to move forward in a decentralized fashion. So today, when you use the web, you basically would type in a domain into your browser, a URL, And it would get resolved by a service called DNS. And that would basically point to a server somewhere. And typically, that server, for the most part, is now living on one of the big cloud providers, whether it's AWS from Amazon or Azure from Microsoft or Google Cloud, et cetera. And that company is operating that cluster of servers and serving up your content or application. In the world of Web3, that content is actually not coming from a centralized server owned by a company that's sitting on one of those providers, but rather it's distributed on the blockchain as a decentralized app. And this is really a fundamental shift in terms of what the internet is, because it sets a situation which is not centralized, not controlled. You control your own data. You have the keys to that kingdom. When you register a .metaverse domain, which is what we recently allowed companies to do, you are the owner of that registration on the blockchain. You have the keys to that. You are not dependent on Touchcast. And in the future, if you want to point it at a different place so that when people navigate there, they would have a different class of technology or experiences, you can do that because it's yours. And all the data is yours. And it's all controlled in this fashion. And that's a fundamental shift from the world of Web2. So when Touchcast approaches this, we see our role in this rapidly growing ecosystem as a facilitator that will build the fundamental building blocks, fundamental technologies that are necessary for the enterprise world, the world of work, to embrace the magic of these new stacks of technologies, of Web3 technologies. Because there's some fundamental gaps that will prevent this being a useful technology for businesses. To give you just one example, for those of you that are familiar with Web3, with how it's handled, much of the engagement with tokenomics goes through something like a MetaMask wallet, which is a form of ability to collect tokens and cryptocurrency and buy and sell. That is an extension to your browser. And that is the gateway into these decentralized applications, because that is effectively your identity that I mentioned earlier when I said you own your domain on the blockchain. And that is not something that is ready in any shape or form to be utilized when you are representing your company as opposed to your consumer lives. So we're needing to reinvent that and create these managed solutions that will allow leaders within companies to facilitate what used to be the equivalent of a single sign-on in a typical Web2 construct to extend into Web3 and be centrally managed by aligning it with the things like Azure Active Directory and others, so as to allow big enterprises to really embrace this revolution. So it's almost like this thing is happening in the consumer space. It's rapidly evolving. Maybe the best analogy I can give is when the iPhone came out, most of enterprise was still using BlackBerries. And for a while there, you had a lot of resistance by IT departments to the idea that you can just, you know, use your iPhone on the network or use apps, which were very new at the time. Of course, that did not last long because the value creation of what Apple facilitated with that revolution and consequently Android shifted how people work, live, et cetera. And this kind of consumer thing impacted how we do things at enterprise. A similar trend is now going to happen in the context of people embracing all the bounty of what the metaverse offers. And there is a need for a technology stack that will allow companies to engage with it. And that's what we're doing as we announce the ability to register your .metaverse domain. We're actually allowing companies to claim their .metaverse domain at no cost. So as long as you have the .com of your company and you can authenticate that by virtue of having an email address, that is the measure by which you effectively can receive that domain, and it's free for you forever. And we can start allowing you to then build your campus in the metaverse, which is unlimited in its size. So we're not in the business of selling you your company's domain or selling you land. We're in the business of enabling all of that and creating tools in a marketplace for an ecosystem to grow and flourish and support all the multitude of use cases that arise when that is opened up. So really exciting time for us to be doing this kind of work, really leading the pack, aligned with some of the world's most incredible metaverse companies, building on the shoulders of giants. Our alignment with NVIDIA allows us to really be on the cutting edge of what's possible with cloud-based inference and rendering of these unbelievable experiences used through our alignment with Epic Games and their Unreal Engine, which is a phenomenal milestone in the history of computer graphics. And of course, leveraging the Microsoft Teams platform as a delivery mechanism allows us to bring these experiences to enterprises at scale without that weakest link problem of expecting to have VR headsets or a very strong gaming computer. Like, anyone that can access a Teams call can drop into MCity, which is the city in the metaverse that we just launched, and have these incredible experiences without the weakest link problem. So I love this term that the future is already here. It's just not equally distributed. By approaching it this way, we're really bringing what for most would be years into the future, into the current present, and allowing companies to embrace and start moving down this exciting path.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to be sure. Now, some of the words that you were specifically mentioning, words like free, unlimited, owning the keys to your own domain, and decentralization, they call into question some potential challenges. What challenges do you foresee in undertaking such a massive shift in how people work and live? Then, you know, maybe working through these challenges, what do you think it'll look like a year from now?
A lot of these revolutions become possible when the technology is ripe for them to become possible. So think of the Apple Newton, which was this idea of a PDA, and Apple got endless ridicule for that idea at the time. It, of course, failed. But we all know what happened later with the iPhone. And the argument in this case is that technology was just not ripe enough. The ideas were there, but you couldn't execute. And I think that's the exact challenge that we have today. And I just alluded to a few minutes ago as we talked about the weakest link problem. How do we take an abundance of amazing technology that arguably is more advanced than what the applications are, meaning the power of these phones, the power of these computers is absolutely remarkable in terms of how incredibly potent it is. How do we use that and not wait for some magical savior device for this vision to come true? So I'm, of course, referring to the idea of these magical glasses that will be worn by everyone and augment our environment. And I think that should be approached with some caution. I'm not suggesting it won't be incredible. It'll just be something that is a niche use case for a subset of the world's population. I think accessibility to technology, to progress, is really important. I think the human factor aspects of putting on a VR headset by definition limits your population to at most 2/3, because others get sick from it, et cetera. And generally speaking, if we look at the lessons of consumer electronics with, let's say, 3D video, the consumer electronic industry invested billions and billions of dollars to try to get us to wear very thin glasses to watch 3D movies, and yet it did not stick. So I think that's one of the big sand traps for the metaverse, in that the assumption that the confusion between the means and the ends. If we accept that the ends is this alternative space, and by space, I don't just mean the space, the physical space, but also the space of ideas and time. If we expect that notion, then we have to accept also that a VR headset or AR glasses are just a means to that end. And if we wait for that to be the only way in which we benefit from that world, I think would be doing a disservice to the technology that can help us accelerate solving problems, as we've been illustrating at TouchCast for years at this point, running incredible experiences and events for the world's biggest companies in the metaverse. So I think that's a big sand trap. Now, having said that, I do think we'll see some material evolution. So when you ask me about what's going to happen a year from now, I definitely think that Facebook, Meta is to be commended for its incredible investment in the hardware and solving really hard problems. And I think we're all expecting and believing that Apple will show up with something that only Apple can do, and hopefully move that ball down the field as well. But it's not a mutually exclusive situation. We should not be in some kind of limbo to wait for that to happen, because I can guarantee you that will not be a savior that will solve the problem. And accessibility to technology is really foundational, I think, to its widespread adoption.
So you mentioned that the future is already here, that we are giving humankind this control, this space, virtual space, to be represented and create in ways they never have before. A place for an ecosystem to grow and flourish, as you said earlier. When being a leader in this realm, it is important to recognize and address key challenges that we might face. I'm really referencing concerns related to sustainability, inclusivity, equal representation, and accessibility. Can you shine a light on some challenges with this topic?
I think this is a really important topic and one that there's no simple answer for, but I think the first stage of addressing these challenges is understanding them and recognizing them, which is something that the tech industry, frankly, does not have a good track record of doing. I think there's a good track record of talking about it, but not a good demonstrable track record of actually showing up when hard decisions need to be made. In fact, typically, when the hard decisions need to be made, the decision is really swayed by short-term economic gains and not long-term strategic, what I like to think of as protection of the host. In my mind, I have this term I use with myself. I'm not sure if it's used by others, but I feel that you have to protect the host. And the host, and for all of these things, is humanity, is the minds of all of us. Think of us as like this collective organism, this collective brain, and we are the host of these technologies. And analogous to when you have, God forbid, a virus or a cancer in your body that metastasizes and ultimately kills the host, that's the situation that you have to be very conscious of. And unfortunately, we've seen some of that as a consequence of some of the decisions made by the big tech companies and the ambivalence, I think, about what their real active role is in preventing certain aspects of the negative impact of what we're encountering with social media, et cetera. And I think we do have an opportunity to reimagine and not repeat those mistakes. If you ask me how optimistic I am that we won't repeat those mistakes, I'm not that optimistic. I think human nature leads us down these paths, very much driven by what our incentive mechanism is. So I think there is benefit in decentralization in the world where you own your data as opposed to a company selling your data about you, and which creates an incentive for them to effectively know everything about you and sell it to the highest bidder. And that by definition is a great start for the metaverse. But with that, it's kind of a dual-edged sword, because when you have total anonymity, that also creates a fertile ground for bad actors. And of course, we can imagine that very bad things will happen also. So I think the first step is to recognize the scale of the challenge. In terms of accessibility, I think I've referenced it in the last part of the conversation. I think it really is important that this is not something that's limited to an elite that can spend a tremendous amount of money on hardware. And it is accessible. And I think one of the reasons we're excited about our alignment with Microsoft is that it is, in many ways, the most accessible technology that's enabled a lot of educators to teach their students. Of course, Zoom is a massive contributor to that revolution. But Microsoft, I think, for the long run, is the right company that's really focused on the total accessibility of this. So being aligned with that ecosystem and the security model that it brings with it is really important, that the incentive there is not to sell the data, but rather to service the users, which I think is really, really important for us.
Absolutely. And I think we can all agree with your idea to protect the host and how vital it will be to take this opportunity to reimagine how things are done, to really do better and be better, service the users. I'm looking forward to see how TouchCast and its partners continue to make this technology accessible and face challenges head on. But speaking of the other players, how will players in the centralized metaverse like Meta and Decentraland, how will those interact with the idea of a decentralized metaverse? And do you have any use cases that need to be addressed or you can share with us?
I think Meta hasn't really shown its hand yet in terms of what it really is going to do. It's shown a beautiful demo and a lot of really core technology that's being developed by Facebook AI and amazing people doing amazing work there. I'm sure that eventually that will mature into something that is much more foundational in scope and vision to what's been shared so far. I think when it comes to things like Decentraland or Sandbox, I think these are great examples, Roblox, of entertainment environments, which are more, I think, aligned with gaming or social network. You know, we've had a history of those for many, many years. I mean, I'm old enough to remember where Second Life was a new idea and the exciting idea. Mm-hmm. So these things have been around for a long time. And the difference is the scale, the difference is the access to tokenomics. But there's room for the next stage. And we kind of, I would say, the grown-up stage of this as it relates to how businesses can start leveraging it in the same way that you would look at .com/99, like, what did that mean for companies? What did that mean for businesses? What did it mean for commerce, for education? All of these use cases have not yet been, I think, really addressed. And that's what we're on a quest to do. So I don't know that it was going to be fundamental and important to be able to move from MCity, from a, let's say, an e-commerce use case where you walk into a car dealership to buy a car or to buy a computer. Or to have a lesson to complete your accreditation as a doctor, to Roblox, or to move from there then to Decentraland. I think much of the excitement, there's, I would say, energy of excitement that is the energy of youth and kids playing video games and creating and learning, like Roblox and Minecraft and many other examples. Then there's the excitement and energy related. Then propelled predominantly by greed and this idea that there's free money out there by virtue of speculating and buying and selling NFTs and land. And that's the second category. And the third category is where we're focused, which is, I think, long-term foundational framework to support this migration into the metaverse so that it could be utilized for enterprise needs.
Mm-hmm. And as you speak to your core focus of laying the groundwork and creating the proper framework to support this, what do you think are going to be some key challenges or gaps to having a mass adoption of the metaverse? Do you have any ideas on how those can be resolved?
I think one of the first thing that jumps to mind for me is the challenges we face as a society with tokenomics, cryptocurrencies. There is a tremendous value in incentive systems to be in place and the world of decentralized finance or DeFi and the supporting legal construct of DAOs or autonomous organizations like that is really challenging the foundation of how we think about the financial world, how we think about the legal construct, the business world in a way that I think is very positive and can create tremendous upside for society in the future if, again, it's understood and navigated correctly. The flip side of that is the challenge of how to regulate it. And again, we can look a bit at the study from the past, this junction we're at today with the challenges the tech industry is confronted with and the need for regulation versus the need for a free market. In some ways, the when you challenge the monetary system, that it becomes even bigger and more threatening to the institutions. And it really means that there is a need for an understanding at base, for, even before you get to regulation. And I don't think that we are at the place where there is that understanding. And I don't see that as a criticism. I see that as a statement of fact, because it's hard even for the practitioners in the field to really wrap their minds around where we are. And it's constantly changing and evolving. So to expect an elected official whose life mission is to be a public servant to have an up-to-date understanding of the nuances of this and how to make the right decisions, unrealistic expectation. So you end up in a situation that's predominantly driven by special interest and not really informed. And I don't think there's a solution for that problem. At least I don't see one. I don't think the solution is to shut it down. I think that that's a mistake, which some authoritarian states are pursuing, which is indicative. I think of what free societies should do, which is the opposite. But I do think there needs to be a real investment in education and how to develop the right skill sets in the hands of the legislators to be able to tackle these hard questions and constantly reshape policy. And that's a tall order, at least in the U.S., in a system that's in gridlock. Because of tribalism. So it is fascinating to look at, but definitely a big challenge because, you know, one law can shut down the whole innovation cycle if it's not thought through quick. And you can have unintended consequences. We went through this when the internet launched. It's not a coincidence that the U.S. is the epicenter of that growth cycle. it was supported by some very important legislation that facilitated the path for that growth cycle. So that's the part that I think of the most as where the risk is for this revolution to happen.
And speaking to investment in education, how are you going to look to contribute and educate people further on the metaverse? What will your contribution be?
I think that it's going to evolve independent of our opinions, very much like the internet has evolved. So our contribution to really try to take this responsible view of how to create the layer of solutions that is necessary in the ecosystem that's necessary for serious work to happen in the metaverse. And that's a pretty big responsibility. And luckily, we have amazing partners like our alignment with Accenture. Accenture has been an amazing partner for us for many years now, and also an investor in our company. And working with the best in the business there and other firms really helps us be of service to the world's top companies, and consequently to all the companies. So I think that's kind of our role to play, is to really have the empathy to understand the needs of an enterprise. Almost, you can think of a company as a form of organism. It's like a person, and you need some empathy for that organism, like, which is this collection of people that, and you can be cynical about it and talk about corporations as an evil thing. But the reality is that's how humans solve problems. We can't do everything on our own. We come together, we create the economic incentives to solve big problems. And that's what a company is. So helping companies navigate means helping humanity solve its problems. And that's what our contribution is. And we would like to, in the process, retain a moral compass and support basic foundational values of inclusiveness and equity that for us at Touchcast are really important. And we'd like to be stewards of that when we can. And to the extent that technology has a role to play, we would like to go the extra mile to do that. But there's no simple answer. And I sometimes feel when talking about this that the more you talk about it, the more it dilutes your actual action, because it kind of, we should just be focused on showing the results of our actions and not talking about it as much.
Great. Understood. I'm going to switch directions a little bit now. You were recently at CES, and for those of us that were not there during this very much anticipated return to live events, how was your experience there? Did you come across any hardware advancements that got you excited?
Yeah, CES was really interesting in that it was a bit of, I've been to many CESs over the years and preceding conferences. Kind of CES was the last great event left standing and after a lot of consolidation. And in the same way that kind of brick and mortar has been under siege from e-commerce, I think these events have also suffered from a contraction and less reason to travel, because information used to flow in a way where you had to be at the show to learn about something. And of course, in the age of the acceleration that we live through, it's become less and less relevant. But there's something about being physically with other people and that serendipity that just, there is no replacement for it. Now, it might be the case that for people of a certain generation, it just will not ever, it won't be part of their portfolio of tools. It just won't be important, won't be relevant. But for me, it is still tremendously valuable to be able to engage with people face to face, and many times actually really senior people that show up. I love this quote that 80% of success is showing up. When you show up and you engage, amazing things can happen in a very short span of time. And as it applies to technologies, I think that idea of new technologies showing up at CES, to the point I was making earlier, has kind of disappeared in the last 5 years or more. So I don't think there's any real expectation that you show up there and a flying car will show up. It is a fun collection, but the changes are, I would say, not that significant to warrant a lot of excitement, unless you're, you know, super geeky about something very specific, which I guess I'm not.
Yeah, and I think I'll wait to see the flying car in the metaverse along with some other cool things there. All right. There is obviously so much to learn, but we do need to wrap it up for today.
Well, go to touchcast.com. We've gone to great lengths to try to tell this story in a very simple way. One, two, three. One, claim your .metaverse domain for free. Two, you'll be able to start building your metaverse campus where your constituents, whether it's internal or external, will be able to do amazing things like meet, collaborate, run events, learn, get certified, buy, sell, anything that we used to have done in the physical world that was kind of disrupted by this pandemic and moved into these calls can now benefit from this alternative space, really streamlining the process. There's some incredible things that are happening. Check out the website to see some examples. And of course, once you have your campus set up, you can also use the tool set to run it and to allow your team members to engage securely and manage that over time. And a growing ecosystem of partners, not just these giants of industry like Microsoft, NVIDIA, Epic, and Accenture, Avanade, but also a growing universe of like-minded technology companies that have an approach to this problem, which is the spirit of partnership, which is really important to us at TouchCast. We work with a lot of other companies, some of them larger than us, many of them much smaller than us, to just focus on how to advance the state of the art and solve problems for people. So check out touchcast.com and say that's the best way to start. And I guess if you want to hear more from me, just tune in to this great podcast, the .metaverse podcast, and we'll have the conversation go on for hopefully a long time.
Ido, thank you so much for sharing with us your vast knowledge of the metaverse. This was a really exciting conversation, and we can't wait to see where the metaverse takes us.
Thank you so much.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Please be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with our latest episodes, where we will hear more from Ido and other metaverse thought leaders as we take this big leap into the future. Thanks, everyone.